John Benson from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba here. And we're back with episode 2, following Lady Winnipeg and Mr. Manitoba, a pair of American kestrels who have taken up residence at the property of Kim Bisson and Rick Onsky on the outskirts of Winnipeg. Unbeknownst to the birds, they're only the most recent pair of these small falcons who, over the past decade, have bred on this piece of land. Kim and Rick will mention it again at the end of today's episode, but in case you're listening to this live and can't stick around until the end, you can find all the videos, photos, and tons of other information on their website at newsun.com. That's NU-SUN.com. Once you're there, just click on the Kestrel Corner link. So, last episode was the end of April, and there was still snow on the ground outside in Winnipeg. The next time I had the chance to sit down with Kim and Rick was June 5th, a little over 5 weeks later. Much had changed since then. When we left off, we knew the eggs were on their way, and since then, 5 eggs had been laid and then successfully incubated, with all 5 healthy young chicks emerging. So far, so good, right? Well, it's easy to answer that with a yes, but it downplays just how much work this pair had put in. The intervening period was anything but smooth sailing. Although the snow is now gone, cold weather and record-setting levels of rain drenched the prairies all through May. Almost every night for the first few days of June, the temperature flirted with 0 degrees. When you've got 5 tiny chicks without feathers and unable to regulate their own body temperature, there's little margin for error. As you might remember from our first chat together, Kim and Rick had been noticing early on some behaviors from this adult pair that they hadn't really seen in any other previous years they'd been filming. Most interestingly enough was that the male and female were actually spending time together in the nest prior to egg laying. I started our conversation today by asking about whether that behavior continued once the eggs were laid, and if there'd been any other new behaviors they'd noticed with this year's pair.
Yeah, the pair, as I mentioned when we first talked, they have a very strong bond, and we saw that during courtship. And it continued throughout all of the egg laying, which is quite unique. We don't normally see the male sleeping with the female, and let alone sleeping with the female while she was, you know, in that process of laying eggs. So she laid her eggs, he was sleeping with her at night. That actually raised some concerns for us, because in all of our years, we've never seen that. And we didn't know if he was preventing her from some of that partial incubation. We would see them at nighttime. She wasn't on the eggs. It was actually quite cold overnight, even during the day. So surprisingly, I don't know what it is. Don't know if it was a weather condition that was forcing them to do that, or just a very unique, strong bond.
Yeah, that's super interesting to just see with the videos that you've had over the years, just to see that this is new, but it's also seems to be working in its own way, which is super fascinating to see. So yeah, you sort of touched on it a little bit there, but I'm wondering if one of you could talk about what all is entailed when it comes to incubating the eggs for the kestrels. Is that something that is just done by the female, or is there some shared responsibility there? What does the parenting look like at this stage of the breeding season?
The female will do the majority of incubating. So throughout the process of laying her eggs, so this year, of course, she had 5 eggs, so it took a number of days, every other day another egg being laid. The partial incubation takes place in the beginning, and then it does truly become more of a full-time job for them. She does most of it. He'll deliver food to her, and then that's usually when they swap. He'll come in, he'll take care of the eggs for a while. She will then come in and switch off with him. And going back to how strong their bond was this year, that again was even quite unique, because she most of the time had to convince him, nudge him, and sometimes more assertively get him off of the eggs. So she wanted to take her turn doing the incubating. So very, very different, but definitely they share in that incubation.
Looking at the weather situation at the beginning, as Kim mentioned, the eggs being left for sometimes 7-8 hours with no one on them, we were very concerned about them getting too cold and being non-viable. And we had discussed this between ourselves, and it's something we've never seen before. As Kim said, she leaves, he's on the egg for a bit anyway. You know, they leave them alone for a few minutes. But there was times when it was like 6, 7, 8 hours, no one was on the egg. And of course, our beautiful, warm winter peg spring weather, we were concerned. Even though the eggs and nestlings can handle the cold way better than they can handle extreme heat. But as you see now, well, all 5 eggs hatched, which again, we learned something new about eggs being left alone for those long periods of time during partial incubation.
Yeah, that's super neat to have that changing situations over the years. Now, obviously, with your property and the number of years that you've been doing this, you know, it's obviously just one breeding pair per season, so the sample size here is pretty small on the large scale of things. I wanted to go back to last episode where we talked about the relationship you've developed with some of the kestrel conservation groups. And I'm wondering, throughout this season, are you in any sort of regular contact with them, or is it just sort of at the end of the year where you reach out and sort of send them everything? Because I'm just sort of curious, like, you know, this is an entirely new sort of like behaviors that you're seeing this year. And I'm wondering if you're getting any feedback from them about, you know, is this something that they've seen at other kestrel nest sites that they have information on, or do you have any information about that?
We do provide them with updates, some of our observations, very brief, high level. But one of the recent papers that the American Kestrel Partnership participated in was with regards to the incubation period in spring. What are some of the trends that they're seeing? The one paper that I just recently read from them, they talk about in Northeastern. So Winnipeg would be classified within that grouping. And they talk about how they wait, the kestrels wait, until the clutch is pretty much complete before incubation starts. And that paper then revealed that some of the survival rate of those nestlings was much more positive.
That's super interesting. So just to clarify, like, there are examples of other kestrels who are incubating before the full clutches, and they have a lower success rate with juveniles?
Mm-hmm. And some of, again, you know, the researchers hypothesize that the reason for that is that the Northeastern kestrels are waiting until the food supply gets plentiful, so that when those nestlings do hatch, there's a lot of food for them. And so that was one of the things that was quite interesting. And so we know that our contributions into that research, while, you know, very minimal because it's only one pair, but that is exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's super interesting to hear. So as I'm sort of thinking about what you're saying, like, this is, you're saying that this is sort of like new behavior, and you're very much worried that these eggs were being left alone too long. But it almost seems like maybe this is like an experienced pair that seems to know that, you know, maybe I'm thinking too much into it, but they seem to be doing a better strategy for their young by leaving them alone until they have the full clutch.
Yeah,
neat. Yeah, so they have the 5 eggs you mentioned, and the fifth one just hatched. I know you mentioned that sometimes the whole clutch can hatch in as little as a single day. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen this time. It was a bit more spread out. Can you talk about that and any other observations you had about the hatchlings from the first one to the fifth one?
Yeah, the one year we did have them all hatch in one day. More common, we do see them spread out over 2 days. And we just because of our desire and love for these birds, we start to get a little bit nervous when it goes beyond 2 days separation. But yeah, so we had 3 hatch on one day. The following day, another one hatched. Then there was a day in between, and yesterday the final one did hatch. The little ones, of course, they are fumbling all over each other. And so what concerns us is that, you know, it might not survive just because it is the smallest and the weakest in the group. So yeah, all five have hatched now and spread out over 3 days.
Yeah, and so you had also mentioned that this last egg, this fifth egg, was noticeably bigger than the other four. And because it was noticeably bigger, it stuck out in the nest, and you actually knew that this was the fifth one that was laid and then the fifth one to hatch. Is that something that you've noticed in previous years at all, like a differentiation in size of the eggs?
No, this is the first year that we've seen such a major difference in egg size. It also was way different in color, much lighter than the rest of the eggs. We've seen color changes in few of the eggs in previous seasons, but this was very different. And we actually did some research and thinking maybe it's a two yolk egg, you know, and then thoughts came into, okay, two yolks, two embryos, are we going to have twins? It ended up not being that, but you know, we start getting excited thinking, wow, like this is probably a major, major rarity. Even in chickens with two yolk eggs, there has never been two chicks hatched from that single egg. So it was quite interesting and keeping us on our toes thinking, oh, what's going to happen with this monster egg, as I called it. But we're glad it finally hatched. We were getting concerned, but things are going well now. And I mean, these little guys and girls, they're growing like weeds, just unbelievable. You know, they're born, they're blind, they're very wet. It doesn't take long for them to dry out. And now they're five little cotton balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super interesting. And I don't suppose just in the nature of how they're handled in the nest where, you know, like when mom is sitting on top of all of them to keep them all warm, you won't be able to track that fifth baby. Hey, like, you know, it's not, even that's the last one, its size at this point is probably not that much noticeable, where when she steps off of them, you would still be able to know. I'd be curious if you have thoughts about that.
Yeah, right now it is noticeable. The head is much smaller in that, but it won't take long before it catches up. And mom is pretty good with feeding them. She makes sure that everyone gets some. So the growing rate is incredible. In a week, they'll be running around in there, moving around. Now they're just bobbleheads.
Yeah, and another way that we can tell which one is the last to hatch is that the ones that hatched first, their eyes are starting to open. So that's one of the indicators. But as Rick says, it won't take very long. And then all of them will have their eyes open. And then, no, we'll never be able to tell who's who.
So I'm curious about our Lady Winnipeg and Mr. Manitoba, the parents here. Is there change in their behavior at all once the hatchlings emerge? Like, are they more territorial? Are they closer to the nest more often? Is there any sort of observations like that that you notice a change in once the babies are born?
Yeah, the parents become very protective of the area. Some of the other birds that they tolerated in the area during, you know, the early stages, they're not tolerating them any longer. They're, you know, chasing them away much quicker. We do also find that the pair will really start to decide, okay, now she's got to do most of the brooding, so she's with the chicks most often, and he has to now really step up and be the provider. So he's hunting a lot.
So I've noticed just through website updates and stuff like that, that there have, you know, been a number of other predatory birds that have been in the neighborhood, like an owl coming and landing on top of the tree or the nest box. And that's sort of the interesting thing about kestrels. They are raptors, but they are the smallest raptor. And so they're also prey to larger raptors. Has there ever been any attempts that you've noticed either this year or last of a larger raptor going after either an adult or one of the babies?
Not that we've seen. The situation with the owl, I mean, we're thinking it's a female because she hunts a lot. Then again, we could be wrong. It could be a male, but been sitting on what we call the wheelhouse, which is where the cable is, runs through to raise the box up and down. And at that point in time, Mum was again sitting on the eggs, and she knew it was there, but she didn't panic. And I don't think that she was really overly concerned. She just heard a noise. I mean, she would never go out to look, not at night, you know, so she just was on alert, you know, just to see what the sound was. We have other raptors around here, the sharp-shinned hawk, Cooper's hawk, Merlin falcons, that could possibly take a baby, a young one, once they fledge. As far as going into the nest box to get it, no. As soon as a head is in that door, and we've seen starlings look in, which are no threat, blackbirds, grackles. Basically, in a short and sweet way, Mum would rip their head off if they actually came in there. But usually they look in and they get the gist of the idea, and she lots of times hops up into the door, and I mean, they're gone. They don't want to tangle with their raptor.
There was also at one point in the last period where another kestrel, I'm not sure if it was a pair or just a single kestrel, had been seen in the area. Were there any more sightings of that throughout the spring period, or was that just sort of in the area and then out situation?
Yeah, we just had, I think around the time that you were here the first time, that one female. She did stay one night in our second nest box, but yeah, we haven't had any more sightings, so it's been pretty quiet on that front.
All right, so we have 5 hatchlings now. What does the next few weeks of their life look like?
Okay, so right now, of course, they're patchy down. So most of their life right now is going to be sitting in the nest bowl with a parent sitting on top of them and them squirming. So the parent will be making sure that that they are kept at the right temperature. So whether that's, you know, keeping them warm or cooling them down if we start to get some warmer temperatures here. And it's pretty much just eat and poop and sleep. That's that's going to be their life for the next little while. And then after the parents start to see that they can start to regulate their own temperatures, they will start to have a little bit more free reign in the nest box.
And then I think you mentioned last time it's about 3 or 4 weeks, and then they're going to start poking their heads out and making their way out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what we'll start to see is at a point in time, the mom, who the female has been, you know, sleeping with them every night and will continue to sleep with them. And then there will be a point in time where she will just decide, I've had enough of this. They keep her awake all night long. And so she will then start to sleep elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's what we've seen in the past. Mm-hmm. Time will tell. Yeah. And then, yeah, they will start to have their feathers come in. They all start to do a lot of wing flapping. They will start to jump up onto the ledge and look out the door and see what this wonderful world outside looks like. Yeah, so it'll be an interesting time. That's when a lot of the activity happens on the webcam, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another thing, as they get older, they become more aggressive with feeding. Poor mum or pops comes to the door sometimes, and he just dumps the vole in there if mum isn't in there, and just leaves, because when mum goes in with food, I mean, when they're getting to the size that they're close to her size, I mean, it's just like a mob, you know. But sometimes they're well behaved, sometimes they mob her. And this is when the male, he has to step up his hunting major, because now one vole, there's lots of leftovers and everybody's full. You know, later on when they get larger, I mean, one vole, one will grab it and gulp the whole thing down. So hunting becomes a major, major thing for both parents at that time, because, you know, one probably couldn't keep up. And then the bug feeding starts. And once the bugs start coming out, grasshoppers, different types of grubs, different types of beetles, then the parents are feeding them that. And I mean, you know, sometimes we could see 50, 60, 70 bug deliveries in one day, because one little bug doesn't do much. It gives a lot of moisture to them. And that's another thing I just like to mention. They don't drink water. Typically, they get all their moisture from their food.
Right on. Well, I'm very excited to see watching some of the videos and the highlights in the next couple of weeks as these chicks start to grow. I'm wondering if, I know we did this after last episode, but for folks who are just catching this one, if you could just let people know how they can go about finding you and finding these videos on the internet.
Our website is www.newsun.com. That's NU-SUN.com. And on our homepage, we have a link to a section called Kestrel Corner. And that's where you'll find all information about the past and then this year, the 2022 live stream and information landing page. And that'll take you out to a lot of videos, photos, and all of the observations.
Great. Thanks so much for your time again, Rick and Kim. So as Kim and Rick mentioned, this is an exciting and critical time coming up over these next few weeks. As my parents can certainly attest to, the period right before I left the nest was the period where my appetite was insatiable. Just as my folks had more frequent trips to Superstore, these kestrels will have more frequent trips to the surrounding fields to get their growing chicks fed and fledged. It's an exciting time for Kim, Rick, myself, and their followers from around the world eagerly watching the development of this young family. But before they fledge, there's one more important step required in the research process, and for this, they've got to bring in some outside experts. Jim Duncan is an internationally renowned owl researcher based right here in Manitoba, and has specialized training that very few other people have. He's permitted to band raptors. Stay tuned to next episode as he'll join Kim and Rick and explain why exactly he's going to go grab baby falcons from their nest and crimp a metal band around their leg, and what the rest of us can hopefully learn from that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully you'll tune in. See you then.